Hello and welcome to the Chase and Michelle program, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Keiser on the ones and twos on this Friday. We made it to the end of the week, and I feel like it's flown by, but that means we've been busy. A lot to get into today, including some college hoops. SEC tournament continues at Bridgestone Arena. And going to be fun. We're going to have Jerry Stackhouse join us at 10 o'clock after their big win last night over LSU, 77-68. So that means Vanderbilt gets to play the Kentucky Wildcats tonight, tip off around 8:30-ish at Bridgestone Arena. So looking forward to that one. Those two teams met just a few weeks ago with Vandy getting the win at Rupp Arena. So looking forward to the rematch. We're seeing some rematches here in the SEC tournament. Tennessee will play Missouri today. Tennessee beat Ole Miss by, what, 15 yesterday?
Yeah, they did.
And somebody said lay the 12.
They did.
Just saying.
It was Tennessee definitely turned it up a notch in the second half. It was looking like it was going to be a pretty close game for a bit, but they turned it up a notch, and that zone defense really, really helped the Vols, especially without Sakai Ziegler there. So they got the 15, but luckily enough, I only bet everybody money line as a parlay, so...
So I thought about this last night, and I was laying in bed thinking about the show and had wrapped up Preds and everything, and I said, I'm going to bring this up with Michelle and see if she knows the term. Are you familiar with the term rope-a-dope? Do you know what that means?
No idea.
It's an old boxing term. So basically it's, you know, when two boxers faced each other, you would let one guy tire themselves out. Like they would be coming at you with all the offense and you just play defense.
Yeah.
And you let them tire themselves out and then you knock them out. That's what Tennessee did to Ole Miss. It was a classic game of rope-a-dope. Ole Miss, you know, I sat there and watched the first half and I was like impressed because they're hitting threes and they're playing with confidence and they're moving the ball up and down the court. But Tennessee was down just a little bit. They hadn't quite turned it up yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ole Miss just wore themselves out, got tired. And you know, I was even, you know, listening to some of the radio calls, some, and they even said that. That's classic case of rope-a-dope. And I think that Rick Barnes and the Vols did that magnificently.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in the first half, you saw Ole Miss getting a lot of points in transition, just trying to beat Tennessee down the court. And legs are going to get tired, especially since they had played a game the day before. Tennessee had fresh legs coming into yesterday. And like I said, when Tennessee played zone, that really helped them out. They were able to turn it up just a notch in the second. Santiago Vescovi and Josiah Jordan James combined for 35 points. Both of those guys had big games, which is what you're going to need, especially with Sakai Ziegler out. And now they will face Missouri this afternoon. It's going to be the 2 o'clock game. They're going to want a little revenge over them after Missouri beat Tennessee on the buzzer beater a couple weeks ago in the middle of the season. So I think they're excited to get a rematch with them.
Yeah, and it's funny. So our buddy Ryan Porth texted me this morning. He's like, what's your feeling on Tennessee, Missouri? I'm like, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know what my feeling is on that. I mean, Tennessee is so up and down right now. And Missouri is too. I mean, I think you could say the same thing about them, even though Missouri is a four seed in this tournament. But like yesterday, you bring up Vescovi, and he was 3 of 10 from the three-point line. I mean, like, he could not buy a three, especially early in the game.
Well, and especially it's concerning because they were playing an Ole Miss team where he was getting a lot of open looks, which is not what you're going to have moving forward in this tournament because the teams are going to be better and they're not going to let Santiago Vescovi get open because they know he can be lethal at the three-point line. But this Missouri team, they actually had a very promising year because their head coach had a chance at being coach of the year as well. I mean, nobody thought that they would be this good. They ended up getting that four seed, so they have the double bye. But the thing I worry about is that this is their first game. And a lot of the times you see that, even if a team gets the double bye, you have these other teams that have been able to feel the environment. Bridgestone is bigger than some basketball arenas. It's a different vibe. Yeah, you've got to have a shoot around, But I think sometimes a team like a Tennessee, like a Vanderbilt, they get to play that first game against a little bit less competitive team, like an LSU, like an Ole Miss. They get their legs under them. They get to feel what the court looks like. They get the depth of, you know, when you're shooting threes and different things like that. And that's why I give Tennessee a bit of an edge today. And I think they're a 5-point favorite heading into this game. So it's going to be very interesting, Chase.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it was a great, you know, first full day of the tournament at Bridgestone Arena between, you know, all these teams. But let's see, I'm trying to find. By the way, shout out to MTSU holding on last night. Beat Marshall by a point. They'll play Florida Atlantic today. You can hear that on 94.9 The Fan starting at 11. So Alabama is an 8-point favorite over Mississippi State. No surprise there. And then Tennessee, a 5.5-point favorite over Missouri, according to Superbook.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and the thing to your point about the double bye, now Tennessee's had a warm up, and so I do think there's something to that. Like Vescovy, I bet he hits it better today.
Well, and that was one of my points yesterday when we talked about Chase. This Tennessee team didn't only need that game just to feel more comfortable on the court as they head through the tournament, but they need to get more games under their belt without Sakai Ziegler. Yes. They need to feel more comfortable playing without him because it is a big adjustment. Their offense looks not a lot different, but it's different for the guys out there. It might be a similar offense, but you don't have your one true point guard. So in addition to just getting a warm-up, getting a chance to be on the court and play in a full arena yesterday against an Ole Miss team, they just got another opportunity to mesh together and see how they play and how they try to replace a guy like Sakai Ziegler since they have to play without him. So I think that that is going to be key. That game was key for Tennessee. And if they can carry that momentum into this Missouri game, it's going to be great. But Tennessee had 14 turnovers. I think Ole Miss yesterday had 19 points off of turnovers. That cannot happen.
No.
They were able to escape Ole Miss because they are a better team and the turnovers didn't hurt them. But if you're in a close game and you have that many turnovers, you will lose that game. And if you're also shooting like that from the three. So that is going to be a huge thing to watch out for. You got to take care of the basketball.
Our SEC tournament coverage presented by Toyota. Buy at Toyota.com. Ready, set, go. Get your Toyota today. Toyota, let's go places. Now, on the other side of things, Vanderbilt and their game last night. So I had to do the – I was doing the Predators game. I ended up not doing it at the arena because I'm going to be honest with you, I was a little concerned about some of the Big Blue Nation that was coming in and having a little fun and what that was going to lead to on a broadcast. So I decided to – and I was tired. I decided to go home. So I had the dual screens going, had the Preds on one, had Vandy on the other.
Oh, there you go.
And was watching the Commodores as they took care of LSU. Now, LSU put up some fight, and, you know, you kind of thought they would. It was only a 4.5-point game, but Vandy ends up pulling away, winning at 77-68 last night at Bridgestone Arena. And you just got to love the fight of this team right now. Tyron Lawrence leading the way with 22 points. But, you know, just like Tennessee being without one of their best players, Vandy's obviously without Liam Robbins, who is by far their best player.
By far.
And you're seeing – what are you seeing? You're seeing Tyron Lawrence, Jordan Wright, you know, Ezra. They're picking up the slack and making it a team effort.
Yeah, Chase, I will say I was struggling keeping the eyes open during the Vandy game. I was trying
real
hard.
Did you end up going or did you just watch on TV?
I watched it from home because I knew we had an early morning, but I will be there through all of it tonight because the wake-up clock isn't at 4:20 tomorrow morning. But no, Chase, I agree. And I think what you have to love about this Vanderbilt team is that they're the epitome of the underdog, right? Even though they've gone on this tear through the SEC, people in the back of their minds are thinking, well, you know, it's Kentucky postseason. Kentucky's on the up right now. Well, Kentucky's point guard is still a big question mark for them today, Cason Wallace, on if he's going to play. And that is going to be huge. Cason Wallace is used to putting up 10, 12, 15 points, add assists in there, has double-doubles a lot, runs their offense. That's a huge loss. And this Vanderbilt team, I mentioned, getting a game under their belt in Bridgestone Arena helps you so much. You've already felt it. Kentucky needs an opportunity to get loose. They haven't played a game in probably a week-ish. Yeah. For their last regular season game, they've been probably just waiting here in Nashville. They had shoot-around yesterday, but they haven't actually got to play a basketball game in Bridgestone Arena yet. I look at this Tennessee team you mentioned, Jordan Wright stepping up, Tyron Lawrence, Ezra Mignone. These guys have been able to be so calm in tight games, in close situations. And I asked Stackhouse, I remember the game in Rupp Arena a week or so ago where there's 18 seconds left and Ezra's kind of dribbling towards Stackhouse to see if, hey, do you want to call a timeout with a couple seconds, drop a play? He's like, no, go, go. And at that moment, you know, you trusted those guys to be able to create points at the end of a game with the game on the line, an opportunity to be back in the conversation to earn a spot in the tournament. And I think that is just so valuable in March. I look at a guy like Jordan Wright, who had a phenomenal performance at the SEC tournament last year. He stepped up in that Kentucky game, stepped up yesterday. So it's going to take guys like that. Ezra Mignone is going to have a lot on his plate, but you've seen that he doesn't squander in moments of stress. Mm-hmm. He's able to rise to the occasion. So this Vanderbilt team, they're going to give Kentucky a run for their money tonight. I'm very excited.
And you know what? I think I agree with Joe Rexroad that if Vandy knocks off Kentucky, they might win the whole thing. They might just on will.
Well, and I meant to tweet this morning, but I'm in the position where I've enjoyed covering this Vanderbilt team so much because of all the adversity they had, that awful loss to Alabama, and then them just going on a tear this year where Kentucky's in the tournament. I kind of think it would be awesome to see Vanderbilt win so they could get into the tournament.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
so
totally agree.
I'm rooting hard for Stackhouse and the Doors.
We will talk to Jerry Stackhouse at 10 o'clock today. But coming up next, with the SEC tournament going on at Bridgestone Arena, we'll talk to the president and CEO of the Predators and Bridgestone, Sean Henry. That's all next. Live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios, it's Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Kieser with you. Let's say hello to the president and CEO, Sean Henry, who is on the line with us. Sean, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Sean.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
We're doing fantastic. The SEC tournament going on right now, and your buddy, Commissioner Greg Sankey, was on Robbie and Rex Road earlier today. How much fun is it being able to work with him, to have this deal where the tournament comes to Bridgestone Arena every year, got a new contract in place? But I know you two have become very close in this working relationship over the last few years.
Yeah, whenever you get to have some success with a friend of yours, it's always better. And that's what Greg is. You know, I've known him for years, even before we were both here. And you know, he's a good State University New York grad too, Michelle, like me and your mom. Pretty rare to find. You know,
shout out.
Country. Yeah, but he's a special guy. He really bought into what we were trying to put out back in 2010, 2011. And at the time, we were bidding on, you know, one of the upcoming SECs along with Tampa, St. Louis, New Orleans, and Atlanta, a few other cities. And I pitched him on the idea of, why ever leave here? This is the best place for it. And he laughed. He said, well, you're kind of right, but what are your future plans with the building? How are you going to invest? You know, what are the new things you're going to do? And, he took it to the then Commissioner Slive at the time. And he was intrigued by it. And then we went to the presidents and the athletic directors, and not everyone was that supportive. You know, you want it closer to your home, you know, your own school, if you will. But Nashville made the most sense for so many reasons. You know, geographically, it's special. Our fans are special. And our city is so easy to work with. And I remember I took this deal to Carl Dean, Mayor Dean, and Greg Hino at Rich Riebling, you know, his left and right arms, and kind of laid out what we could do. And, of course, Scott Ramsey was on board. And, you know, there are a few hurdles we had to come through. But we always say, this is a yes city. You know, Butch Beard at the CBC, Scott at the Sports Council, the mayor's office at the time, and obviously our staff. So we're all in. And, of course, I had to get our hockey operations buy-in because, you know, a crucial time of the year, you send your team out, you know, for 10 days or so, as opposed to doing an NCAA, you know, first and second round where it's only 4 or 5 days. You know, this is bigger and better. You know, it's 7 sessions, not 2. But it made sense for all of us. And then you fast forward, 12 years wasn't enough. We went back together, and he said, let's just lock this thing in through 2035. And that was a pretty good celebration, you know, with, again, Scott and Butch, and at the time was Mayor Barry, you know, our whole staff. It was really, really cool. The funny thing about it is you always see the positive in things, but once in a while you see the negative. At that press conference over at Nissan Stadium, if you remember it, a reporter that I won't mention because I do like him, but he's not the smartest, you know, knife in the picnic basket, said, well, it's too bad you got this. It means we'll never get the NCAA again, huh? And I stared at him dumbfounded. It's like, yeah, you just won $1 million, but you don't have to get scratch-offs anymore. You know?
Right.
So it's such a great run that we're on.
Oh, it's been fantastic. Sean Henry is with us. Now, one thing that I wanted to ask you about, because I've seen this in various parts of the arena and I've heard you talk about it, this one goal mentality that you have as an organization, that you have with your staff, there's a lot of different things that kind of go into that. So explain that a little bit more.
You know, so when Tom Seguin took over as chairman, Barry Trotz, who was the coach at the time, you know, labeled Tom with the guy that removed the word no from our organization. You know, at the time in, you know, 06, 07, 08, 09, you know, 10, it was, you know, the Preds are a great hockey operations department. We're going to draft well. We're going to train well. We're going to make the guys all-stars. And then we're going to trade the rights right before the deadline or free agency and recycle that and do it again and again and again. And Tom said, no, we're not doing that. You know, we can not just compete with the biggest cities in America, if not the world. We can be bigger and better than every one of them, despite the size of our city. And I fell in love with that. I mean, that's why I came here. You know, it was that attitude. And obviously Herb Fritch embraced it as well. And, you know, Governor Haslam will too. But it's really simple. Be better than everyone else at everything you do. And let's face it, that's what you guys take on with your show. Anyone that's going to attain any level of success, your goal better to be, you know, to be the best. So it's one goal. We need to update it, by the way. But it was or is to be the number one venue in America built around a Stanley Cup championship team. And I remember when we first put it up, a man I love, Brent Peterson, he was mad about it. There's a guy that never gets mad over anything. He said, it's embarrassing. We never won the cup. Why'd you put this up? I said, right, we never won the cup. And we never will if that's not our ultimate goal. And he said, yeah, but everywhere we don't win it, we failed. I said, you're right. And he said, but every year we're not the best venue in America, we failed. I said, you're correct. Now, failure doesn't mean doom and gloom. It just means you have more work to do. And, you know, by setting that lofty goal, all of a sudden, you know, we are the reigning number one sports franchise, according to ESPN. We just won Arena of the Year. We were the busiest building in the world last year. That's right here in little old Nashville. You don't do that if you don't set lofty goals. You don't lock in the SEC for basically 25 years if you don't have aggressive goals. And from a team standpoint, after we put that up, we started becoming the model of who and what we are. You know, we haven't won the cup yet, obviously. But since we put those things on the walls, I think our overall record in the league is sixth best in that, you know, 12, 13-year stretch. Now, that we still haven't won the cup, so it doesn't matter. But I don't think it's any small coincidence that our best years followed declaring that we can be bigger and better than anyone out there. Now, we need to update it because instead of being the number one venue in America, we should say the world.
The world, yes.
I love that. 2-1-1.
World domination.
I know. That's what you're after. 2-1-1 on this road trip. You know, last night didn't go the way everybody wanted it to, but still two more shots at it in Southern California tomorrow night and Sunday. But I'm really liking this mix that I'm seeing with, you know, Tyson Berry being added to the team, some of the veterans that stayed here, and then some of these youngsters that have been called up from Milwaukee. It's been fun to watch.
It really has been. You know, at the start of the season, you know, you thought this was the best team we ever had assembled, I think was your exact quote. I did too. Didn't really work out exactly the way we wanted to. But, you know, the key pieces that made us feel that way are still here. And then you intermingle some youth, and then you know, put Tyson Barry on the ice, and some of the passes he makes as a guy's literally on his shin guards are just incredible. So it has been fun. You know, whenever you have Saros in net, you know, you and I could be in front of him. We still have a pretty good chance, you know, to win. But yeah, we're 2-1-1. You know, last night, I'm glad you brought up, you know, the ugly. And it's like I'm talking to my mother, you know, just showing me how bad I am at things. So I appreciate that. But yeah, it wasn't the way you want it, you know, to finish, of course. But, you know, 2-1-1 into this road trip right now, you are happy about. I mean, obviously, you want to go undefeated. It's probably a little unrealistic, but that's always the goal. And now we get to go to LA and Anaheim.
We got Sean Henry on with us, Preds president and CEO. Sean, the Preds have been on a long road trip, but on Tuesday, they're going to play 6 of 8 at home, and you guys have got a bunch of events going on at Bridgestone Arena. You got the Ford Military Week, which would be the 13th or the 18th. St. Patrick's Day is coming up. You can watch the opening games of the NCAA tournament on Thursday, and most importantly, the countdown to the Pekka statue unveil the morning of March 25th. How awesome is it to see, you know, Pekka, a guy who you've watched just grow in this organization, come full circle, has the retirement last, announces his retirement last year, and or more than a year ago, and now is having a statue, the first ever statue of a player in Bridgestone Arena?
I think it's the first ever statue of an athlete for a professional team in Tennessee, actually. So, but who more deserving?
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Pekka has set the standard for our organization. And I don't care what player you talk to, whether they played with him for half a season or 10 years, they all talk the same way about him. So much of it is on what he did on the ice. I mean, he was the guy that could get us win every single night. But more often than not, what they talk about is who he was off the ice, what he did in the community, for our fans, for so many causes, and what he did for them personally. The sheer volume of players that lived with Pekka as rookies or young players or traded players, I mean, that list could fill up an incredible alumni list as well. So I'm so excited that he wants to continue, you know, stay with us and help our goaltenders at every level. I love that he loves Nashville, and, you know, this is still, you know, his second home. And I just can't wait to see him again. You know, that week he'll come in early, and when he walks in a room, he lights up that smile. It changes how you feel. And, you know, in a small way, you get an understanding how the guys felt when he came on the ice. So we're excited about that. Really excited about Military Ford Week or Ford Military Week. Get a chance to celebrate, you know, men and women that have given or continue to give so much more than any of us can ever understand or fathom if you haven't served. And then, you know, sandwiching one of the bigger holidays of the year, St. Patrick's Day, with two games is pretty special, too.
Well, speaking of some of the basketball games we've got going on in Bridgestone Arena today, how cool is it to see just so many fan bases travel to watch their team, to come to Bridgestone Arena and experience the SEC men's basketball tournament? You guys have a bunch of games kind of in front of Bridgestone Arena, a bunch of different things fans can be involved in. But I'm sure when you look out the window, you can just see a sea of a lot of blue, orange, red, all the fan bases out there.
Yeah, you know, I'm somewhat colorblind, so I just see a lot of people celebrating and having fun.
Even better.
It really is cool, yeah, especially this year, because you really went into this tournament. And of course, anyone can always win, right? You have 14 teams that can win. But in reality, you normally have 2, 3, 4 teams that could win. Mm-hmm. This year, you really started it with 6 or 7 teams that, you know, could win, and you wouldn't be surprised if they were playing on Sunday. And I think that ignites all the fan bases. I mean, 15, 20, 25 years ago, Arkansas had the most dominating road fans in basketball, you know, and obviously we've enjoyed Kentucky's fans, you know, the Blue Mist for so many years. But now you have Arkansas doing it. You have Auburn doing it. And you get to see Vanderbilt show out in ways that they haven't before. And, of course, UT is doing it. It's really, really cool to see so many strong programs in the SEC where the fans want to come out to Nashville and see them win.
Sean Henry is with us, the president and CEO. So I know that you all have started the season ticket renewal campaign and a lot of incentives to go ahead and renew and get your season tickets. But one thing that you've done as a part of that is unveiled the Predators 25 logo, which looks awesome. I think that's really cool. It's hard to believe during the 23-24 season, you'll be celebrating 25 years of hockey in Nashville. But what do people need to do to get their tickets renewed?
Well, you know, we went into the renewal period before we even started that. I think 85% renewed because so many people take advantage of the multi-year packages that we have. So, you know, we're a little different than every other team. We're already at a higher level renewed before we started than any team in the NHL, which is pretty cool. But, you know, there are about 900 tickets to renew. I think we've already taken care of about 20% of that in the first week. But, again, if you lock in, you know, for the 3 years, you have a 0% increase, you know, year over year. You know, much has been made about our average ticket price has increased. That's on the secondary market. On the prime market, if you lock in for a 3-year deal, you're always paying so much less. You know, I'm really proud of where we rank in the NHL. We're one of the more affordable tickets on a season ticket basis than any other team out there. You know, I think we're 23rd or 24th in the league. which is really incredible when you look at the past, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. You know, that's important to us, though. We have the best fans in sports. We should try to build the best package in sports for them as well, not just the amenities, but also looking at the investment that they make in us, time and money. And, you know, we try to make sure that, you know, you lock in with us, we're locking in with you. And that's been the story, you know, for a long time now.
Well, get on that for sure. And also that if you go ahead and get that done, you'll receive priority access to the NHL awards and the drafts, which will be here this summer at Bridgestone Arena. So looking forward to that in June. Sean, always a pleasure to talk to you, and enjoy some basketball.
Yes, enjoy some basketball.
And we're going to see you later today wearing blue, Michelle.
No, I will be working the game, so I will not be rooting for any teams, but I will watch every single game today.
Hey, Michelle, whoever says you can't cheer from the press box is an angry old man that yells at crowds.
Well, Rex Rhodes says I can't.
And be happy. like I just said, the angry old man. Don't worry about Joe Rex Rhodes, because let's face it, if the Spartans were playing, he'd be cheering and crying and hollering. So life is fun. Those rules are for old, boring people that deserve to stay
up
in
an
old traditional market. Exactly. What's wrong with people, Chase? Be happy.
Exactly.
Thanks, bye, Sean. Joe.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Sean Henry joining us, the president and CEO, as he does every Friday at 9:15. You know what? He's right. Like, all these rules and these curmudgeons are like, you can't do this. You can't be a fan if you're media. Yeah, get over it. Like, yes, you can. Like, because you got into this because you were a fan. Now, true. I do agree. I don't need you screaming, go Big Blue, while you're covering the game, and, you know, we carry the Vandy games and stuff, so I need you to but I have faith. I have all the faith in the world. You will be fine. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Coming up next, we'll get into the Titans for a few minutes, because I heard something this morning on Robbie and Rexor that kind of got my attention. We will discuss that next. Jerry Stackhouse at the top of the next hour. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Edie, do you think that Nicholas Petit-Frere could be this team's left tackle? I ask that because I have my doubts that they would get into the Orlando Brown sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. But I do look at a guy like Mike McGlinchey, you know, could be a not super expensive answer at right tackle. But to me, only if NPF, who of course played left tackle at Ohio State, is maybe better on that side. Do you think that's a possible outcome here with this offensive line?
I think it's possible, and it's funny talking to some of those O-line specialists at the combine. I mean, now you got guys who just, like, they focus on one position and they know that position inside out, and they're like Rain Man of that position, right? So that's what a couple of these guys that I talked to, they said that they would rather have him on the right side. I would probably agree, but as you mentioned, he played left at Ohio State before, and if you don't get Paris Johnson Jr. and you end up in a situation where you got to get a guy in the back end of the first round or at 41, a Darnell Wright, a DeJuan Jones, these are guys that could come in, you put them at right, and you flip Petit-Frere to the left side, and then as you mentioned, the free agency option, you know, whether it's Caleb McGreary, who the Falcons just released, or as Mike McGlinchey, I don't know that there's going to be interest in those guys. I don't think the Titans are going to be too active free agent-wise as far as that first wave. And those are guys I think are probably going that first wave.
That was Teron Davenport earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Back here, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Could Nicholas Petit-Frere move to left tackle? I'm just going to say this right now. I don't love that idea.
Yeah, I don't love it. I think you'd rather have somebody a little bit more experienced there, especially if you're planning on doing the whole running it back with Tannehill, Derek, Henry, which I think is the way that they're trending towards. But anything can happen as free agency hits us next week. And obviously the draft is right around the corner. I don't love it because that position is just so important, especially when you have a righty quarterback. So I would say keep him where he is and try to get somebody who's more experienced at that position. But if you get a veteran guard there next to him, maybe I would be a little bit more open to it. Just a little bit.
Yeah, I would too. I just feel like that there are some better options at left tackle than Nicholas Petit-Frere. I mean, obviously we know a couple of the guys in the draft. You know, if you bring in somebody in free agency, that could certainly be the case. But I do think Teron's right. When you're looking at free agency, they're not going to spend a ton of money. They're not going to be super active in this first wave of free agency. It's going to be more the second and the third wave to get some of the bargain bin guys. One guy that's just become available that I'm interested in is Adam Thielen, wide receiver, has been with the Minnesota Vikings since 2014. Now, I think he's probably going to cost a little too much for the Titans, and so they're likely not to do that. But if they did, I wouldn't hate it, because I think he would be the perfect number two to Treylon Burks. I mean, you look at since Jefferson got to Minnesota, he's still like a 700-yard receiver. He had 10 touchdowns in 21 and 6 touchdowns last year. That's not bad at all, you know, for a guy that's not your number one. He would be a more than solid number two. TD and I were talking about it a little bit this morning. But I think he's probably going to cost a little too much. I don't know if that's a guy you could get on a 1 or 2 year deal for, you know, $5-6 million. He's probably more 8-9-10 range.
Well, yeah, that was kind of my point that I was going to make when you asked me in the break. Yeah, if you can get him for that $5 or $6 million, like you said, 1-2 year deal, great. I'm signing up for that all day long. But I do look at him. I know he has been pretty consistent, right? He's had some 1,000-yard seasons, 400. At the last 3 years, he's 900, 700, 700. So, right, he's productive out there. You mentioned the touchdowns. He is older, though, right? He is 32 in the league. I would rather go bet on a guy like a Mike Evans and bite the bullet and pay for a guy that you know is going to be a big boy wide receiver out there for you. Because Charles Robinson has come on our show and says that the Bucs will be open to selling Mike Evans. I mean, it's pretty clear by naming Kyle Trask, your quarterback, that they're tanking. So I think if I'm looking at it like this, I would rather not sign an older receiver who, yes, is still productive to a $8 or $9 million, if that's what he's asking for. I'd rather go pay a bit more, get a guy like Mike Evans, who has had almost an 1,000-yard season, I think, every year since he's been in the league, and get a guy like that.
I just don't know if they're going to pay the price. That's the thing. I just don't know if they're going to pay for it.
Let me look up what Mike Evans is making right now.
Yeah, I mean, a guy that, like, I think they're going to be after guys like Mecole Hardman, which I'm concerned about him and the injury. But, you know, before last year, because he only played 8 games last year, you know, he was close to a 700-yard receiver. I mean, that's what you're looking for in a number two. But they're going to be in the range of Mecole Hardman, Paris Campbell,
Juju, question mark?
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe Juju. I don't know. But somewhere in that ilk. And not, excuse me, not so much, not so much a Mike Evans and a top tier guy that's going to cost a lot of money. I just don't think this team's going to spend money.
Which is, that's what they need. I mean, if you think that Treylon Burks is going to make a huge jump in year two to be a number one wide receiver, then okay, go get a guy like Adam Thielen. But the way I look at it is I would rather pay Mike Evans close to, I don't know what he's, is he asking for maybe 20 a year, 18, maybe 15 a year. I would rather go pay 15 a year for a guy like Mike Evans than pay 7 for a guy like Adam Thielen.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I'm just telling you, you know, this is one of those that I would like to do that too, but I'm trying to think like the Titans, and I just don't think they're going to spend.
Do you think when it comes to spending money in free agency, a lot of it comes down to the ownership and the new stadium and things like that?
I think that has everything to do with it. I think that has all the things to do with it, that they would rather not spend a whole lot this year, because I think they spent a little bit more last year and obviously didn't work. And so they would rather not spend as much this year, you know, put that money towards the stadium, build through the draft, and, you know, even if they take a step back this year, don't make the playoffs again, get a top 10 pick, you know, that's just building for the future.
So we got a couple texts on the text line just about our wide receiver talk here. Kevin says, why would you? It's a losing cause to look up results of a high-paid old dudes at receiver. Doesn't usually work out. It's a bad investment to even try. We've done it so many times in our history. Never worked out. It's never worked out. One time we got a draft receivers. Well, they did draft A.J. Brown. Not to bring that up again. Yeah. But, no, and that's probably – see, the whole free agency and them not spending money is – it's frustrating, too, especially if you have a Ryan Tannehill on your team, you have a Derrick Henry on your team, because you look at it, and when you have guys like that on your team, you're signaling to the fan base, we're still in our window. We're not blowing it up, but if you are keeping guys like that, as a GM and as a coach, you have to believe we can compete for a championship.
Right. Well, and I think, too, you know, the draft, you're not going to fix everything through the draft.
No.
But you got six picks right now, okay? So if you are Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel, and it doesn't matter when you do it, what round or whatever, what positions are you drafting with those six picks? For me, it's pretty easy. I'm getting two offensive linemen. I'm getting two wide receivers, so there's four. I'm getting an edge guy and a middle linebacker.
Yeah, that's pretty on par for what I'm
getting. And if I can't get – if and I could swap out – the edge or the middle or the interior linebacker for a corner.
Yeah. No, I could see that too. I mean, we've talked about their number one and number two main issues on this team are offensive line, because Mike Vrabel said it himself at the combine a couple weeks ago. We could need five new offensive linemen. So that is one for me. Very, very clearly the first one. I'm right with you, Chase. I think you need to draft two guys there who you hope that you can develop and they can be franchise guys for you all. And then wide receiver is right there. And then a couple defensive guys.
615-737-1025. How would you answer that question? Doesn't matter when they're taken, what round it is, who it is. You got six draft picks. What positions are you taking if you're the Tennessee Titans? We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Keezer with you. Play hooky and join 1025, The Game at Jasper's, located at 1918 West End Avenue, Thursday, March 16th, for the first day of tournament games. While you're there, take advantage of the shot and a beer special. I'll probably do that. That's a shot of Nelson's Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey plus a bottle domestic beer for just $10. Jasper's, oversized bar, TVs, and game room make them the place to catch all of the games. Taking your calls and text 615-737-1025 on the Titans, whether it's free agency or the draft, whatever you want to weigh in on. But I did ask the question. You got six draft picks if you're the Titans. Doesn't matter where you take them, but what positions are you addressing? Kevin on our text line, driven by WilsonKennyHoney.com, says left tackle, two wide receivers, inside backer, corner, and guard.
Pretty much right on par with what we said.
Yep.
It's very clear when you look at this Tennessee Titans team, when you watch them last year, what they need in this draft. I will say, if they decide to make moves and go up to get a higher pick, to get a quarterback, that's a different story, because you are foregoing those needs for now because you believe that one guy in this draft can be the future of your franchise. But looking at it right now, saying that they stay with Ryan Tannehill, they stay with Derrick Henry, what is the biggest need? Wide receiver, number one. I mean, when Dontrell Hilliard has your most receiving touchdowns,
oh, yeah.
That when a running back has your most receiving touchdowns, that's not a great sign. And offensive line. I mean, Ryan Tannehill can't throw the ball if, A, he doesn't have anybody to throw it to, and B, he doesn't have an offensive line, and B, he doesn't have anybody to throw it to.
Steven on our text line says, you are wasting time by trying to predict the Titans draft by position before free agency. Sorry for trying to have a little fun and, you know, be creative, Steven.
So that. Chase, I feel like you feel pretty confident that the Titans aren't going to make a big move in free agency.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, that's why we're having this discussion, because I don't think they are. I mean, everybody that sits here going, they're number one, tell me the last time that they've really gone out and done that. They don't typically do that. Plus, I think everybody knows that you're going to build in the draft. You got to draft your own players. And so that's why we're having this conversation. No matter what they do in free agency, they can go sign a wide receiver in free agency. I still think they need to draft two. They can go sign a offensive lineman in free agency. They still need to draft at least two.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at free agency, too, is somewhat of a Band-Aid, because a lot of the times, too, I mean, unless there's a contract dispute between people like DeAndre Hopkins or something, but a lot of these people are older guys in the league who that right. current team doesn't think that they're worth the money anymore. So when I look at free agency, yeah, sometimes you can go out and you can get a guy who can give you a solid 3-4 years for your organization. But at the end of the day, if you're going to go try to get an older offensive lineman, like say, let's use Roger Saffold, for example. Let's say they go try to get him from Buffalo, get him on maybe a 2-year deal. We said maybe $5 million per year, $10 million to your deal. Okay, well, Roger Saffold doesn't have 5 more years in this league, I don't think. So you're still also going to need to draft a guy. I mean, it goes for any position. If you're going to go out and get a free agent, they've obviously already had a lot of years under their belts. There are some instances where you can find a young guy and it's just not a fit for that team. But, I mean, you still need to draft and develop offensive linemen, because you saw when they had, what was 2019? I mean, look at that offensive line. You got Taylor Lewan there, Ben Jones. I'm forgetting a couple names, but you need guys who you can draft and have a part of your franchise, because although the offensive line market looks better than the wide receiver market this year, I mean, people don't give up good offensive linemen. You want to have right. a backup, but you need depth at that position. Probably the most depth than any other position on your field or on your team, because they're so important. So that's why it is so crucial to draft and develop these guys, because people don't give them up easy.
615-737-1025. Let's go to Chris in Atlanta. Chris, what's up?
Hey, Chris.
Hey guys. What's up? Thanks for taking my call. So to argue the free agency and wide receiver question, I typically wouldn't do it, because you don't know how those players are going to translate over to the Titans side. I mean, yeah, y'all were talking about Mike Evans. We talked about the Bengals, T. Higgins, and all that. But they're great over here, but how do they translate over here with the Titans? And, you know, I was doing some research during the break. If you really look at it, our history of draft or bringing in free agent wide receivers isn't that great. I mean, you're talking Josh Reynolds, Julio Jones, Randy Moss, Adam Humphries, Rashard Davis, Cody Hollister. None of those players, maybe with the exception of Adam Humphries, really made a true difference, you know, on the team. I mean, we could probably argue Julio, but, you know, he got injured. And, you know, to argue with Chase's point, we've tried the big free agent signings, Jadeveon Clowney and Julio Jones, and neither one of those has worked. With my picks, I would probably say, let's go get a couple of offensive linemen. Let's go get a wide receiver. That's 4. Maybe go get another corner to address the possible depth concerns that you have there, because we've had corners drop like flies this past season. And maybe go get a linebacker for my 6th pick. But yeah, I would necessarily say, let's build our wide receivers through the draft. We've drafted good wide receivers. We just need to be able to develop and keep them. We've done that with Corey Davis. We've done that with A.J. Brown. There's success there. Let's keep going with it. And let's keep, you know, try to develop Burks and maybe bring in another wide receiver to go along with them. But, yeah, drafting free agency, it's very difficult, because you just don't know how those players are going to translate over to the Titans. So that's all I have to say. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Chris.
Sure, he makes a valid point. I mean, you don't know how it's going to work. And that's why, you know, with Adam Thielen, in regards to him, I wouldn't do it if it costs a lot of money. If it's cheap, if you get through, you know, the first few waves of free agency and he's still sitting out there and you can get him similar to what they got with Austin Hooper on a 1-year deal that's pretty cheap, then that's when I would do it.
Well, you also don't know when you're drafting these guys, too. Yeah. So at least with free agency, you've seen what they've been able to do in the league. Yes, with a different organization, but you at least have a grasp on their skill set and how they perform on Sundays. And teams have contacts within other organizations. They can, you know, get notes on how you are in practice, how you are in the locker room, different things like that. So, I mean, you really don't know drafting, too. So
right. Coming up next, we'll get back into hoops and talk to Jerry Stackhouse, Vanderbilt basketball coach. That's all coming up here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.